because a bat was tested positive for rabies, and that was here in Pierce County. It is, I think, easy to forget about infectious diseases here in the United States.
On World Rabies Day, we focus on rabies that is rampant in Africa and Asia. This is the third in a three-part series to bring awareness to this disease. Part one was an interview with Dr. Guy Palmer, professor of pathology and infectious diseases at WSU and the founding director of WSU's Allen School for Global Animal Health. In part two, I spoke with two veterinarians on the ground in East Africa. Dr. Felix Lancaster works in Tanzania, and Dr. Thumbi Mwangi works in Kenya. In this third episode of World Rabies Day, I want to bring it home. Although rabies seems to be a problem in a distant land, we can't take rabies for granted here, where we live. I have spoken with two local veterinarians, Dr. Sig Nottingham with All Creatures Animal Hospital, and Dr. Leon Sperlich with Browns Point Veterinary Clinic, about their experiences with rabies and rabies vaccines. I'll let Dr. Nottingham start us off.
My name is Sig Nottingham. I'm a veterinarian working in Puyallup, Washington at All Creatures Animal Hospital. And we got involved with Rabies Free Africa back in about 2016 when WSU and the Allen School of Global Animal Health reached out to us to see if we'd be interested in participating. And so at that time, we decided that we would become donors with their program to reduce the incidence of rabies in children in Africa. And we decided at that point that we would donate $1 for every rabies vaccine that we gave to our patients during the year. And so for the last 4 years, we've donated to that program. Specifically, World Rabies Day, I guess, was started in about 2007. This year, I believe it's every year, it's September 28th. And so that's coming up pretty soon.
It sounds like you're actually contributing quite a bit. I mean, $1 per rabies vaccine adds up.
Yeah, it's added up to a good amount over the last 4 years. We hope to be able to continue to do that.
Now, do your clients know that you're doing this donation when you vaccinate their pet?
We haven't been very good about publicizing that, actually. Initially, the first year we did, and we had posters and let people know.
And I imagine this year with the pandemic, that has also had an impact in your vaccine schedule.
It has to a degree because we had to suspend wellness visits for some time. But actually, with the pandemic, we've been as busy or busier than ever. It's just been kind of a strange year.
One of the things that I noticed, I had read a little blurb about you on the WSU website, and you had mentioned one of the benefits is the One Health program. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Because about, they estimate, 70% of infectious diseases originate from animals and affect humans, primarily probably in lesser developed countries than the United States. I think that veterinarians' knowledge in those areas of animal diseases could probably be put to better use than it is by physicians. At least, you know, in the U.S., we don't really see that many exotic diseases or that many infectious diseases. And so it's kind of out of our everyday awareness. But in third world countries, it's a major factor. And I just thought that this was a good way for veterinarians to make a contribution to public health more directly. And so, and I think it's probably becoming recognized a little bit more that there's an intimate relationship between animals and humans in regard to health, especially when it comes to infectious diseases. And also, of course, you know, the food animal production business. But so by doing something to influence or decrease the rate of rabies, by vaccinating dogs, it was a way we could have an impact.
Yeah, and a big impact. From what I understand, this program in East Africa is really making a difference.
Yeah, that's my understanding too. We were fortunate enough to have Dr. Felix Lancaster come to our practice, I think it was 2 years ago now, and he talked to us about the program and the impact that it's had. And surprisingly, it was actually news to me initially that most of the rabies cases came from dogs. And I was thinking that it was more likely a problem with wildlife, but it's really not. And in the United States, of course, the rare cases that we see of rabies are usually from exposure to bats or other wildlife like skunks and raccoons and foxes and other canine species like that. But the fact that dogs were the main problem in Africa was kind of surprising to me. And they found, of course, that if they can vaccinate the dogs in the area that they're working and get up to 70% vaccinations done, they can pretty much reduce the population, or reduce the incidence, I should say, of rabies in that area very, very significantly. We haven't ever diagnosed a case of rabies in our clinic. We have had some personal experiences, though, because not all of our staff are vaccinated for rabies. Sometimes we have situations where people will bring in unvaccinated animals, and so there's potential for exposure. And in the last several years, one of our technicians was bitten by an animal with no history of rabies vaccination. It was actually a cat. And I believe that animal ended up dying with central nervous system signs. And so,
oh, ouch.
That person had to undergo the post-exposure rabies prophylaxis treatment while the head was submitted for examination for rabies. And fortunately, it came back negative, but they started the treatment plan on her anyway, because that's kind of important to get it started as soon as you can.
Well, you know, I say proudly that I've been vaccinated for rabies, so I imagine you have also.
I've actually been vaccinated twice, once when I first got admitted to veterinary school, just like you did with the other types of vaccines. And then because I worked at Northwest Trek for a short term doing some things for them through a program through their resources, I was vaccinated with the human diploid vaccine as well.
I know it's the bat population in Western Washington that is of concern. And I don't know if you've had any experiences or exposure to the bats in this area.
It's one of the reasons that even though, for example, your cat might not go outside, it's still a good reason to have them vaccinated for rabies, because we did have an instance where a bat got into a person's house. The cat that they had killed the bat, handled the bat, and therefore the bat had to be tested for rabies. I believe that cat may not have been vaccinated for rabies, and I'm not sure about that. So in that case, if it's not vaccinated, it needs to be quarantined and watched closely. In fact, in some cases, they recommend euthanasia and testing, but since the bat was available for testing, I believe it was tested and it was negative.
I mean, I've had clients ask me about, well, do I really need to get these vaccines for my animal? For some reason, they think that vaccines are harmful. And generally what I tell them is like, well, you know, here's the information. It's your decision. However, I got to recommend the rabies for two reasons. One is that if your pet is not vaccinated, if there's exposure and they don't catch the bat, they do have to euthanize the animal. And the other thing is that it's the law.
We highly recommend that they have their animals vaccinated for rabies. And for us in the clinic, it's actually a safety factor, as I related that other situation with our technician. You know, if that animal had been vaccinated for rabies, she wouldn't have had to undergo that treatment and be worried about what was going to happen. So we highly recommend it. And, you know, it's not infrequent that people in the veterinary industry, technicians, assistants, or doctors get bitten by one of the animals that they're trying to treat. So it's really a good thing to have them all vaccinated.
Yeah, and vaccines have eliminated smallpox, pretty much eliminated polio. You know, there's diseases that, you know, we just don't see anymore in humans.
Yeah, that's very true. And the group at WSU and Rabies Free Africa actually thinks that they can eliminate rabies in Africa with this program. It's a pretty daunting protocol to go through, you know, just to try to do that, because every year there are new dogs coming that have never been vaccinated and they have to be vaccinated. So if they can establish a vaccine program in local communities and take care of that, eventually they could eliminate rabies, or at least come close to that goal.
Anything else you want to add?
Sure. I think people who hear this might consider going to the websites like the Rabies Free Africa, or go to the World Rabies Day and look at their information and see if they might be willing to donate, or at least ask your veterinarian if they're participating. The more people we get involved to provide funding for something like this, the better chance of them achieving success. So go take a look at the information and see where you can donate. Even if you can't donate, then the other thing I would suggest is make sure that you get your pets vaccinated for rabies and mention it to your veterinarian that there is a program where they can participate.
Yeah, that's all great information. Thank you.
If you are just joining us, this is the third part of our three-part series on World Rabies Day. We just heard from Dr. Sig Nottingham. Now, let's listen to Dr. Leon Sperlich and what she has to say about vaccinations.
I mean, there's a lot of resistance now to vaccinations. There's this whole group that calls themselves anti-vaxxers. And I know that's for like children and stuff, but, you know, does it spill over into the veterinary world? Are people not vaccinating their animals?
Well, that's a good question. I was reading an article on a French news magazine, another thing that's probably coming up with, you know, with a COVID-19 vaccine on the horizon, where people are preparing their arguments ahead of time as to why they're not going to get vaccinated. Like, let's start demonstrating now, because we don't even have a vaccine, but we're already against the idea. So that kind of makes me laugh. Like, wow, go ahead. You don't have anything else to do. So let's prepare your arguments now. But since I do a lot of alternative therapies, I do see a population that is, I think, asks a lot of questions, maybe more than the general veterinary medical population, right? So I have my conventional medicine clients, and then I have the folks who are seeking alternative therapies or complementary therapies, and people in both parties will ask what vaccines are needed. So I've had my own practice for over 20 years, and I'll say there's not a lot of resistance to vaccines so much as, can we discuss it? And I do find it's interesting that some of my clients are happy that I'm willing to discuss doing the vaccines before we just go flying them into the animals. So that's good, I think, to listen to what people are asking about. Don't just give the vaccine. I want to talk about what's needed. So I appreciate people are inquiring. And so my approach has been to, you know, do a risk analysis. Is there a lot of resistance to rabies vaccine? Of all the immunizations, that would be the one I'd say, no, not really. Yeah, it is good. There's something about that human safety factor, not wanting to put people at risk. So I sure have had some clients say, no, thank you. I think the risk factors are low. I'll accept any liability or risk on my pet's part, but I feel like my animal's risk factor is very low and I don't want a vaccine. But there aren't a lot of people who say no to rabies. Will they say no to other immunizations? Sometimes yes. And so we get to talk about that. But so over the years, I've had a couple of cases, and I bring this up with my clients. I have had a couple of cases where the a child invited over to the household is getting into maybe it could be an older dog's face or annoying an older pet or a grumpy pet of some kind, and child gets bitten. Adults of the different parties, one with the child, one with the dog, get into a little bit of warfare. And so this has happened more than once where it became more of a liability issue. Said dog didn't have any known exposure with wildlife, but owners of the dog might have elected to not vaccinate because the pet's older. And I certainly understand that desire. But a couple of times that's gotten into a really big showdown between the owners of the dog and the parents of the child. And understandably, you know, in the one episode I can think of, the child wasn't seriously hurt, thank goodness. But that can be a real liability issue for owners. So I bring that up as an example for folks. We are lucky here in Washington not having a whole lot of rabies to worry about, although there is some. But my one example I will bring up is that, you know, you need to protect your pet. What if your pet's provoked? I know you say your pet would never bite anybody, and I completely believe you, but here are some cases where there was an issue, and this is how difficult things became. So I like to bring that up to help people think a worst-case scenario. We all hope that doesn't happen. So sometimes that's a topic of conversation. And then the other thing I bring up to people is another case I had, the only client I know of that was exposed to rabies. Her very ancient little dog came in from the backyard one summer, and it was carrying a little mashed dead thing in its mouth and being very proud of itself. So it came in the house, and the owner said, oh, come over here and drop it, and found herself, because she saw a little claw sticking out of the mouth, and she's like, oh, a dead bird or something. This little elderly dog couldn't have caught anything, right? It was just found something in the backyard. And so the dog comes over and drops its treasure into the owner's hand, and the owner found herself holding a dead bat in her hands.
Oh, God.
Yes. And so she contacted her doctor, and this is a person who travels internationally and is sort of well-versed in the what's out there situation. And so although her dogs were vaccinated, she was not. And so she went through post-rabies exposure prophylaxis, which she handled well, and she was absolutely fine. Because the bat was tested positive for rabies, and that was here in Pierce County. That was a number of years ago. That's the one case I know of. And probably there are other cases where somebody's found a dead or dying bat, and you know, you only hope that people remember that bats can carry rabies. But in this case, she came in. I'm really glad she shared that story with me. Of course, her pets were fine, and she was fine. But that's another example I'll bring out of, hey, that happened here in Washington State. And so that was handled properly. And there were no losses in this case, except for the bat, of course. When I tell those types of stories and just share like, hey, these are just some episodes, I think that helps people understand we're not just talking about an idea of, I don't like the idea of vaccines. It's also, well, why would we be vaccinating? Well, it's because there are diseases out there, and we've only gotten to where we are, especially in some places in the world, like World Rabies Day, right? We've only gotten to this place with disease control because of the immunizations and the testing and the scrutiny that's gone on before.
That's an amazing story. And I think part of it is that the woman who, you know, found herself with this bat in her hand was educated enough to know who to call and that she should call.
Yeah, And I had a personal friend call me in another case where, and that was here in Tacoma, a friend of mine called and she was very concerned because she found what she thought was an injured bat in her attic in her house. She had gone into the attic rooms of her house and found a debilitated bat, which she carefully put into a box and called to see if I would attend to this little injured wildlife. And I, alarmed, I asked her, did you handle that bat with your bare hands? And she said, oh, yes. And the poor little thing probably got trapped here in the house all night. And I didn't find it till this morning. So I told her that she should contact the health department. And she asked, oh, does the health department see bats? And I said, no, but here's what I'm thinking and here's what I'm worried about. We had a little conversation about rabies and she went, oh, so that's another a person I know who's very well educated. And her first thought, bless her, was that she wanted to help the little injured wild thing. And I was, of course, very concerned about her health. And in that case, the health department did take a look at the bat and tested it for rabies, and it was negative. So that was a happy end to that story, except for the bat. Except for, again, the bats are just not winning in this case, that's for sure. So it is, I think, easy to forget about infectious diseases here in the United States. I think maybe people have lived here a long time, and maybe for several generations have lived here a long time, and they don't really think about how Mother Nature is out there and all its microbes and parasites and things can still, they still affect us. Isn't it, wasn't the Center for Disease Control some years ago said, hey, you know, with all these dog parks and stuff, there are actually more intestinal parasites showing up in not only dogs in the United States, but also in people and kids. So, you know, we've got to be really on track with doing our parasite prevention. And in this case, you know, infectious disease prevention, because we're all so involved with our animals. We're really living with them and living right next to them and hugging them. And we need them so much in our lives. But yeah, we've got to be careful too. So.
Well, that's quite a story. You know, another story, but you told me that on one of your visits to Paris, you went to see the Louis Pasteur lab. And for people who might not know, Louis Pasteur developed one of the first vaccines for rabies. And this was, gosh, in 1880s sometime. What do you know about that?
I have to say, I don't know as many details from the visit. I was in a couple of years ago, but what I can say is from a veterinarian's perspective, a scientist's perspective, it was a fascinating visit to consider what all we have now in terms of research and tools and lab safety and you know, care with research. And so when you go to the Louis Pasteur Museum, it's a very high security situation, very, very high security. They're going to take your pass. They want your passport and they're going to take it. And they have very watchful people all over the place, not only to preserve this, you know, very treasured historical site, but also when you go into these rooms that were labs, they have a lot of some of the original equipment, this beautiful blown glass tubes and vials, and some of these cases that you're looking at with the different types of testing equipment and solutions and an explanation of how this research was done. There is actual live rabies material in some of those cases and samples. And yes, there's a couple layers of glass between oneself and the rabies. But Louisa, it is very sort of intimidating and awing and a little scary to think I'm in the same room as rabies virus. So I think about the They were certainly very sophisticated for their day, but maybe the lack of biosecurity that existed in the past compared to modern times and how much they were able to accomplish. So that's very awe-inspiring and, again, a little bit sobering. That was one of the big things that hit me when I was in the museum, was thinking how with relatively little equipment, but building on what was already known, how those vaccines were developed and the risks that these researchers would have taken to you know, get somewhere with these vaccines, not just rabies, but measles and the other vaccines, different cultures and specimens that were being set up and some things being discovered by happy accident, the different means of developing and plating and growing organisms. That whole era of discovery was really well spelled out in this museum. And I think it really shows how much, if we are brave enough to continue to ask questions, we can come up with answers that, you know, no one really expected. But that was a really awing experience to go to that museum. And Madame Curie is my next one, the next time I get to Paris. So that will be my next visit. But yeah, that I would highly recommend that for especially for veterinarians. I found that just a fascinating place to visit.
And speaking of, you know, lab security, I came across this statement. I don't know if it's true or not, but I would not doubt this. But it says, while working on rabies, Pasteur kept a loaded gun in his lab. Should anyone get bitten, then they would be shot to spare them the painful death and spread of rabies. Because there was no immunoglobulins, there was no post-exposure protocols or anything like that. And the descriptions that I've heard of human rabies, you know, it affects the brain and it causes hysteria and dementia and, you know, just horrible, horrible pain. And I'm not a gun nut or anything, but boy, that's one case where it might come in handy.
Yeah. But I think I'm really glad that you're bringing up World Rabies Day. That's something that really I tuned into. You alerted me to that. It's the end of this month. And I'm interested in getting more involved with World Rabies Day with a real specific goal in mind. It's not that I don't have good compliance with rabies vaccine at my veterinary clinic, but the concept, a couple concepts. One is immunizations can save lives. And I think people forget that. And at Brown's Point, I'm very conscious of my staff and I modeling correct attitudes and behaviors, life-saving attitudes and behaviors when it comes to science and medicine and how to preserve health with immunizations, with things like masks, with things like hygienic behavior. And a lot of my clients would do anything for their animals, and they don't always remember to do that for themselves. And so when we're consciously wearing a mask and talking about how to be safe in the era of COVID-19, and our clients, some of whom probably don't believe we should be going through all this malarkey, if they see us, their treasured veterinary staff, taking care of their beloved pet, taking things like healthcare seriously with coronavirus, with immunizations, or at least having discussions about immunizations and why we should do them, I think that piece is important. So the idea of celebrating or acknowledging World Rabies Day through my clinic makes a lot of sense, because it's another way to say, look at where we are. We have a chance to eradicate this disease. Not only thinking, not because we have a lot of it here, but just to raise that awareness. And then the idea of thinking more globally, which is hard to do when you're hunkered down in your house and you're not really getting out very much. I really wish that more folks like my client who had traveled a lot, the client with the little dog that exposed her to rabies, right? She's traveled internationally. She's been in many other countries in the world and seen many different walks of life, different health circumstances. I'm not saying them necessarily better or worse, but just different. Hey, things are different in different parts of the world. And that informed her health decision to call her doctor because she's a little bit more aware of like what is out there. And it's easy to feel very safe and secure, like you have no worries in your own home. And that's not to say we shouldn't worry, but to be aware of more global issues, I think is a smart thing because sometimes global issues do become local issues, don't they? Like coronavirus. Let's think of an example. So as long as I've been a veterinarian here in Washington State and we're told, hey, rabies is only in bats, I do wonder, you know, when is that going to change? Because we sure have plenty of raccoons here. We sure have plenty of other potential rabies-carrying species. And I'm glad that hasn't changed. I'm glad our situation is relatively safe here in Washington. But I think that all of us could benefit from being more aware of global issues, as well as just, of course, developing some compassion for exercising our ability to have compassion for people who are having so many more health issues in whatever area, whether it's rabies or anything else.
I guess I'm hoping that, you know, by bringing World Rabies Day to more people, you know, the knowledge of this, it'll remind them how important these vaccinations are.
Yes. And another big scope of immunization, the idea of immunization is preventative care. So with rabies virus, you better prevent it because we don't have a treatment. With other viruses, maybe we've got something we can do. And if you run into something like COVID-19, well, there are some treatments, but prevention is another little buzzword that can come along with that and say, we need to prevent disease. And preventative care is a really good thing to focus on when it comes to topics like World Rabies Day. So thinking globally and thinking preventative medicine and thinking the human-animal bond, that's a really big topic there. Why is this an issue? Because we want to be around those animals and sometimes they want to be around us. So I like what World Rabies Day can bring to a conversation with all of that and that we need science to help us and we need other people and the interaction of other nations to help promote these ideas that holding hands with scientists in other countries is very, very important and having concern for other populations and an interest in what other people are doing is really good for human beings. Even if we're stuck in our homes, we still can benefit from those ideas as well.
Well, it's been wonderful talking with you. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
I want to thank Dr. Nottingham and Dr. Sperlich for sharing their knowledge and experience with us. You can help eradicate rabies in Africa by going to rabiesfreeafrica.org and consider donating. You can also help here at home by asking your veterinarian if they participate in World Rabies Day and by making sure your pet is up to date on their rabies vaccination. This is Dr. Louisa Beal reminding you that World Rabies Day is September 28th this year and every year.